Hello, I'm Kate Chabot. Welcome to an extra edition of the SITREP podcast from BFPS. When someone in the armed forces is unhappy with how they've been treated, it is the forces themselves who handle that complaint. Everything from small administrative decisions to bullying and sexual harassment. But for the ninth year in a row, that complaint system has been deemed not efficient, effective, or fair. The verdict comes from the watchdog, the Service Complaints Ombudsman, who says efficiency got worse last year, while complaints rose to more than 1,300. But despite those concerns and past significant failures, the Ombudsman, Mariette Hughes, has told me major changes in recent years are delivering significant progress, that more improvements are on the way, and crucially, she believes servicemen and women can have confidence in the system. Mariette Hughes, welcome to SITREP. Good to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
And now, this is the ninth year in a row that the watchdog has deemed the service complaints system not efficient, effective, or fair. How is it failing to deliver?
So I think the important thing to start with is that whilst it's not efficient, effective, or fair yet, it is improving. And looking at this year's annual report, there are only a few minor areas that are holding it back. So it's absolutely the case that we're not at the situation where we can say it's efficient, effective and fair, but it is significantly better than it has been over the last 9 years. That being said, there are still things that concern us. There are things that concern me especially. One is around the length of time taken for appeals, and specifically the length of time taken for complaints around bullying, harassment, discrimination. Now, those historically have always been the complaints that take the longest to resolve, and they're the complaints with the most potential for emotional harm. You know, people are in a very emotionally vulnerable situation. They may still be working with individuals about whom the complaint relates. When it takes so long to resolve those complaints that aren't the very straightforward allowances, paperwork, anything else like that, they're put in that difficult situation for longer than is necessary. So one of the issues for me is around that efficiency, is around making sure that you don't face a disproportionately long amount of time depending on the type of complaint that you've raised. I would like people using the system to be able to just get the same level of service and get the same outcomes within the same amount of time. One of the other issues we've raised is around the ability to operate keeping up with demand. And that's something that we have marked as green in the report. We marked as green last year. But we must face up to the fact that over the last 3 years, there's been a consistent rise year on year in the number of admissible service complaints. And on top of that, we had mass complaints raised last year around one particular issue. So we need to be able to adapt the system to be able to deal with that continuing influx of complaints. Because every time an improvement is made, it's then almost immediately eroded again once the number of complaints goes up by orders of magnitude.
What was that particular issue that caused mass complaints?
So this issue relates to the accommodation offer, specifically single living accommodation. And there are currently, I couldn't give you the exact number, but there are over 3,000 complaints that have been submitted on this issue. And just to put that in context, the number of complaints that were received last year on this issue is the equivalent to 3 entire years of the whole service complaint system landing all at once. Now, it's quite right that those individuals are able to raise them as service complaints. They are individuals who feel wronged by a situation, and that is the correct method of raising those. But the system itself isn't designed to absorb that. So the way that's been addressed is that the Ministry of Defence has started to design a bespoke process to deal with those complaints. Because when you have complaints at that level coming in, you need to make sure there's consistency in the way they're being looked at, the way the outcomes are being recorded. But it is an issue where we've seen a huge influx into the system, and the system just isn't designed to adapt that quickly to that unexpected level.
And do you know why there was that huge influx of complaints about service accommodation?
I don't know the specifics of the complaints because they've not yet made it through to my area. But my understanding is in changing the accommodation offer, there are concerns that previous versions of the policy may have placed individuals at a disadvantage and that that may have been unfair and potentially discriminatory. So that's being worked through by the services and the MOD now to decide what happens with those complaints and whether or not there have been sort of large scale wrongs that need rectifying. Once those individuals have gone through that bespoke process, they will, of course, retain their right to come to my office to have us check the outcomes, because they are still at their heart service complaints.
And when you consider the improvements that you say need to be made in terms of the efficiency of dealing with complaints, what kind of effect is it having on servicemen and women involved and for the services as a whole?
So one of the big issues in service complaints is people who don't even come forward, who don't want to raise their complaints at all. And we know from years of looking at the surveys that when individuals say they've suffered a wrong but they did not raise a service complaint, one of the key drivers they list as reasons why they didn't raise it is because they thought the process would take too long. And that's really distressing for me, because I've been saying for the entirety of my tenure, we can't fix things unless we can see them. And so when individuals choose not to raise service complaints because they do not want to engage with a process that will take so long, I absolutely understand that position, but it's a really dangerous situation for the services to be in, because so many things are then going under the radar. We also face the issue that in many cases, when a complaint relates to perhaps a relationship breakdown in the workplace or behaviours of another individual, many people don't want to put themselves back in that situational vulnerability, and they don't want to deal with the amount of time that that complaint will take. And as I mentioned earlier, those specific complaints do take longer. Quite frequently, in my experience, they will look at how long they have left in a particular role or a posting and how long the other individual has left. And if either of those are less than the average time they could expect that complaint to take, they will just decide to deal with it, knowing that they will move on and it won't be their problem anymore. The real concern for me is that that doesn't fix the problem. It just moves the problem. You know, it's really easy to sit here and say, I want more people to raise complaints. But it's a kind of a chicken and egg situation. Until and unless the services and the service complaint system can show that those sorts of complaints will be dealt with efficiently, we can't expect more people to come forward, but we need them to come forward.
So how do you fix these problems that you've outlined?
Been trying for 4 years. There is no magic wand, and as I said, the landscape is always changing. Every time we think we've fixed one thing, there'll be a new nuance. And so I don't think it's a one and done fixing solution. It's a journey of continuous improvement. One of the outstanding recommendations we made in a previous year was around professionalisation of the service complaint system. Not treating this just as a process, but treating this as a large scale thing that we need to get behind and understand how we can work more efficiently, how we can identify opportunities for better technology, better handling, and really get on the front foot of that, so that when we see those increases in complaints, we're ready to be able to deal with them and not dealing so reactively with everything.
And in terms of service personnel having confidence in the system, that the bullying, the harassment, the discrimination complaints, they seem to be some of the most serious complaints and seem to be getting the least effective hearing, though.
They are, the levels of trust and confidence that individuals have in the service complaint system are low, and I would say they are lowest in those sorts of complaints. We can see it in things that have happened recently in the media. We can see it in sort of outpourings on social media where people have talked about their experiences trying to raise issues and not having had them heard correctly. And, you know, we can't shy away from that fact. In the past, cases like this and complaints like this have been handled poorly. One of the big issues for me is getting over that historic hurt and how the system was, because the system has improved. There are a number of elements that are much better now. So, for example, previously you would have to go directly to your chain of command, to your commanding officer, with your printed Annex F form in hand and explain to them all the ways that someone had wronged you and sit face to face and discuss that. We still use the same complaint form, but it can now be submitted online and it goes to a centralised admissibility team where a specified officer who does not know you, does not know your career and does not know the individuals involved, they are the only person who can tell you whether or not your complaint should be admitted. So any suggestion of bias, any suggestion of undue influence at the submission of the complaint, that really critical moment where people have chosen to stand up, that is so much more independent now than it ever was. Unfortunately, people will often share their, well, not unfortunately, sorry, people will often share their experiences of historic complaints. And it's really hard to get across that it would be different now, because it's real to them. It was their experience. And I don't want to discourage anyone from sharing their experience where it has gone wrong. But for the majority of cases coming forward now, they would expect a much better level of service. I say the majority, there are still cases where it goes wrong. That is where my office steps in as that independent oversight body. But the improvements have been made at the front. Having said that, there are also issues in, you know, when we talk about the way complaints are handled, one of the key things I see is around use of tone, use of language, and really being able to relate to the things that someone has gone through in a complaint of this nature, which can be really difficult, really distressing. So we provide training to all decision bodies and appeal bodies across all three services on how to remember that people are people, And that might sound a little bit like sucking eggs, but I think there is a danger when we get into service complaints, when we get into formal complaint determination letters, that we start to use very elevated language. We start to try and be cut and dried and black and white with everything. But in complaints like this, when we're talking about bullying, when we're talking about harassment, when we're talking about how someone has treated you as a person in your place of work, you can't be black and white on that. You have to recognise the personal element.
And do you feel that you're being listened to? They're taking what you say on board?
Do you know, I genuinely think I am. That has been a real journey over the last 4.5 years. You know, when I first came on board, there wasn't really that existing learning relationship between my office and that of the services, you know, and it's always a difficult position to be in as an ombudsman, because you are the person who pops up once a year and shouts about how everything is terrible and all these things that still need fixing. But actually, at its heart, my belief is that ombudsmanry gives us a real opportunity to get on the front foot of making things better. And I would love, I've said it before, you'll probably already have sound bites of me saying it, is that at my heart, I'm a lazy ombudsman. I would like not to have to fix things. Mm. So if I'm going to not have to fix things, that means that things have to go right in the first instance. And that means I am absolutely critical in helping people get it right first time. So as I say, we train and do learning sessions with decision bodies and appeal bodies. We also present at all new commanding officer courses across all three services, and we're about to start doing RSM courses for the Army as well, so that individuals in that position of power who will have people under them coming to them saying, I've got an issue, I don't know how to deal with the complaint system, are ready and able to help them through it and know the changes that have come about. We also meet quarterly with the heads of each of the single service secretariats to basically talk about what we can learn from each other. We are all, at the end of the day, aiming for the same goal, which is a system that works and a system that delivers for people. And it's absolutely important that we work together on that.
And given that it has been 9 years, though, of annual reports saying the system isn't delivering, what stopped it getting fixed in that time?
There have been a number of issues. I will say, and I've made no secret of it historically, that it has on occasion taken the Ministry of Defence far longer than I would like to deliver on recommendations that have been accepted. So when my office is saying this is the thing that we think will help get us over that gap and make the system efficient, effective and fair, and we have a formal response that says, yes, we accept that and we will move on with that recommendation. When some of those recommendations are then open for more than, you know, 3, 4, 5 years or more without being completed, it really hinders that progress, because we've already made the recommendation as to what should fix it. The ball is no longer in my court, and there's limited influence I can then have on how fast that moves. You know, I try and raise these issues in front of HCDC. I shout about it as much as I can. But, you know, we need to get the ball moving. Once we've accepted there's a problem and we've accepted that there is a way to fix it, we need to get on and do it. But you'll see from my report this year that actually one of the things I'm pleased about is we've seen a lot more progress this year in delivering those outstanding recommendations.
I'm just really interested, you know, it must be incredibly frustrating for someone like yourself to make a recommendation, to have it accepted by the MOD and then be waiting, as you say, sometimes for years to actually be implemented. What's going on? Is it a lack of willingness? Is it inefficiency or what is causing that?
I don't think it's a lack of willingness at all. Certainly from the individuals I deal with at the Ministry of Defence, they are bought into the need for change. I think speaking broadly, I think there is... I have a slight concern that resources are stretched in too many directions. And the individuals who are charged with delivering some of these things may also be pulled in 3 or 4 different directions at once. And it's really important then that we can keep the focus on this, because if the focus shifts to the next new thing or the next initiative, all that work just lays stagnant. One of the other things that we're also trying to move more towards, and it's been an important part of changing that relationship between my office and the services and the MOD, is making sure that any recommendations we're making, we have the power to deliver them ourselves.
Okay.
And that's a really tricky balance, because at its heart, it's my job to oversee the system, but it's the Ministry of Defence's job to provide the system and to operate the system. But for example, in this year's report, we've recommended developing some additional KPIs, some additional measures that we can look at statistically to say, this is what's working, this is what's not.
KPIs?
And really drive down, sorry, key performance indicators. So when we talk about key performance indicators, when we talk about efficiency of the system, the one number we all cling to is 90% of complaints should be done within 24 weeks.
Yeah.
And we talk about how well the services are doing against that number. And as an overall high-level measure, I don't think that's inappropriate at all. But what we don't have is sub-measures or smaller metrics that cover, okay, but should we expect something different for cases that go to appeal? Should we expect something different for complaints that have 20 heads of complaint and 50 respondents versus ones that are one issue cut and dried? So what I would really like is that suite of metrics that sits under it, which will help us drill down into the question you asked at the beginning, which is what is stopping us from hitting that efficiency measure so that we can put those things into place. Mm. And one of the things we've recommended in this year's report is that not only do the MOD agree to that, but that they allow me and my office to develop those. If I am the person who says what good looks like and what the system needs to do in order to achieve efficiency, let me set the measures. That also takes some of the pressure off their individuals, that this is not an additional piece of work they're having to do this year. This is something my office can spearhead.
The ombudsman role that you currently hold is due to become a more powerful armed forces commissioner next year. How will that be different?
Incredibly different, incredibly exciting times, Kate. I think the first point just to put out there and just to assure anyone listening or watching is that the commissioner role will absorb all of the functions and powers of SCOAF. So the service complaint system itself is not changing, and the ability for individuals to access, you know, my office or the equivalent of my office in the future, that doesn't change. They've still got all the same rights and protections. What the commissioner will have is an expanded remit on top of that to look into and report on any aspects of service life that affect the welfare of service personnel. So those issues that we sometimes see where people raise it as a concern of, you know, something is happening and I'm not sure it's right, but I don't feel wronged enough to make it an individual service complaint that I want remedied for me. But this is concerning me. The way we are treating our people is concerning me. Those would fall under the remit of the commissioner. Similarly, we see complaints where somebody feels wronged by a policy, and the outcome of the service complaint is that policy has been applied correctly to your situation. What we cannot look into currently under our jurisdiction is whether or not that policy as a whole is fit for purpose and is right for defence. But that would come under the remit of the Armed Forces Commissioner.
Could you give me an example on that?
Absolutely. So if, for example, somebody raised a complaint that, I know for a particular journey, they weren't entitled to claim reimbursement for their travel costs. You know, they were given leave, but they had to fund their own travel to do something. And they think that actually they should have been able to claim travel costs for that journey. Quite often a service complaint will say, actually, you know, according to this paragraph and this paragraph and this paragraph of the Get You Home travel policy, I can see that it was applied correctly to your situation. I appreciate you're frustrated, but I cannot reimburse you for that because the policy has been applied correctly, which is fine. And quite often people will accept that. But then there's a so what level to it, which is, OK, in this situation, if we were providing the best sort of situation for our service personnel, should we be able to pay for those journeys? Is that something that needs wider looking at? Is that something that has just affected one person in a very niche situation? Or is this something that has the potential, if we could fix it, to, you know, head off 30 service complaints in the future because there's something fundamental that is affecting the welfare of people? The other element that the Armed Forces Commissioner will be able to do, which is something we are not able to do, which is really exciting and really powerful for that independent voice for service personnel, is they're able to take contact, queries and complaints from family members of service personnel. So the current service complaint system, it's a service person complaining about something that's wronged them in his or her service life. Quite often, people don't want to raise their own issues. They might need a family member who can say, look, this is how it's affecting someone. This is what I'm seeing as somebody who is going through this life with them. And similarly, we have situations where military spouses or children are expected to live by certain policies, certain rules, as a result of being part of a service person's immediate family, but they have no recourse to raise any sort of complaint under the service complaint system. So this will allow them access to the commissioner to say, actually, as a relevant family member, am I being treated correctly. Because one of the things we know when we look at recruitment and retention and people's enjoyment and experience of careers in the armed forces is it's as much about how they feel as it is how their family feels. Mm. You know, the people they choose to surround themselves with who are going through this life with them, they need to be looked after as well.
And do you think the commissioner role can do more to make the complaint system operate more efficiently, effectively and fairly?
What I think the commissioner will be able to do, so as I said, the powers of SCOAF are being absorbed in their entirety. So they will have the same powers that I do in terms of making recommendations on what the Ministry of Defence should do to improve the system. Mm. Where I think the Armed Forces Commissioner will be able to strengthen that is it gives them the ability to speak to people, again, related to those who have gone through the system and understand the impact it's having. When we talk about the welfare of service personnel, as an example, one of the things we've noted in this year's annual report is the experience of respondents. Respondents who are implicated in a complaint, who have the right to be supported by an assisting officer, but don't have really many other rights within the service complaint system. They don't have the right of access to my office. They can't raise complaints to me if they feel that something wasn't done correctly in the investigation of that complaint. And for a lot of them, you know, we talk about the time a complaint takes. There is a whole other side to this as well, who are also sitting waiting for the outcome of a complaint, mm. not knowing whether it will lead to a finding against them, not knowing whether it will lead to further action. That's a whole half of the service complaint system where we're not understanding the welfare impact on them. The widening of the role into the Armed Forces Commissioner means that not only will they have the power to address specifically the system, but also to lend a voice to those who don't currently have one under the service complaint system.
I'm wondering, you've been in this position now for 4 years yourself. I wonder, do you ever feel like a broken record having to say again that the system isn't doing its job?
Only when I have to do things like that, I come out with sound bites and I wonder how many times have I said this over 4 years? Genuinely, no. I mean, as you mentioned, it is frustrating sometimes, but it's frustrating because I care. And I think if I weren't frustrated sometimes by the lack of progress, that would be a sign that I needed to no longer be doing this. We are seeing new changes every day. We are seeing an unprecedented level of sharing and effort put in by the single service secretariat to work with me, to work with my team. And that's what invigorates me. So yes, I do sometimes feel like a broken record when I'm writing yet another report saying, no, it's not efficient, effective or fair yet. Sorry, but we're nearly there. But we genuinely are nearly there. And it's small little things and slightly different things each year that are preventing it.
So if a serviceman or woman asked you if they could have a confidence in the system dealing with a complaint they have, what would you say to them?
I would say to them, absolutely, yes. I would say to them, you know, as with any system, there is no 100% guarantee that everything will go right. You know, I cannot personally vouch that you will have the correct decision on admissibility, that you will have the correct decision on your complaint. But I can tell you that in the majority of cases, I'm very, very happy with the quality of the investigations and the outcomes. Mm. What I will say is every stage in the complaint that has the potential to go wrong, you have the right to come to me. And that's where that trust and confidence should come from. You know, nobody gets everything right 100% of the time. But the fact that there is an ombudsman organisation that can oversee the entirety of the system should help give that trust and confidence.
You see, Mariette, you're not lazy at all. You're not a lazy ombudsman. The door is open and you're still working on it. Thank you so much for your time. It's been great.
Bring me all your issues. Please let me help.
Exactly. I'll talk to you later then. Mariette, good to speak to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Kate. Lovely to speak to you.
News, discussions and analysis. This is SITREP.